800-900.
What's good, Waves and World? It's your boy, Five Star in Vegas, broadcasting live as always from beautiful Summerlin, Nevada, and here with my co-host, my guy, the only Sacramento Kings fan that I know. What's good, Spreadster? How are you on this
Man,
Wednesday
speaking
afternoon?
Of the Kings, hopefully they can pull some upsets like these NFL underdogs have been doing this year, because it's been quite the year in the NFL, right? Giving me some hope. Maybe there's some new blood coming in this world of sports.
You know, that's the thing that makes football always be the top dog, though, Spread. Every year, every fan base has hope. Me speaking for myself, who would have thought 2 years ago that my Texans and my Saints are maybe arguably two of the top three teams in the NFL, you know? And it's hard to argue with the early results. We know it's early, it's no overreaction, but these are pros. And it's been really impressive the way the Saints have been able to make some of these teams, NFL good teams, look. Now, we know Charlotte isn't that good, but what they did to the Cowboys, and we'll get to that a little bit later in the show when we get to the pass, was really, you know, impressive. And I think that's the difference between the NFL and most other sports. You never know when it's your turn, when it's your year. And that's why it's so hard to repeat. And now Kansas City's trying to do something that's never been done. That's the three-peat.
Yeah, and we'll see if they do. Do we want to talk about some of these teams, though, that came in with high hopes and aren't doing well, right? Because there's a lot of 0-2 teams, and we know it's tough to make the playoffs if you start 0-2. You want to dive right in?
Yeah, let's get into those teams. Now, we have the Titans, the Giants, the Colts, the Panthers, the Ravens, the Rams, the Jags, the AFC South. The whole division is 0-2, so already Texans, our future on the Texans to win the AFC South is looking pretty golden, because they're already up two games, you know, after 2 weeks in their division. And no one has a win in the AFC South outside the Houston Texans. Out of those 0-2 teams, which one has the best chance of turning things around, Spread, and still making the playoffs?
Well, obviously, the Baltimore Ravens.
I think
so.
Have you looked at their schedule, Spread?
Oh, it's tough. They could end up being 0-5, right? Big game this week.
0-5, Spread.
Big game this week. I think they might.
Watch year.
We're going to have a fun show today. I think they bounced back against Dallas this week. So we'll see.
We're going to be on opposite sides probably on that one. I think the Cowboys get it done this week on that one. So you think the Ravens are the team that turns it back around and still makes the playoffs?
Yeah, and I think you left out one other team on this list, the Cincinnati Bengals. I mean, I think they would be a number one, but I think the Ravens are right behind them. It's weird, though, because the Steelers are 2-0, still not getting respect.
I really like the Bengals. We talked about that game a little bit, and when we break it down, we'll get more into it. But you remember leading into this weekend, we both kind of liked, you know, the Bengals a lot. Sino was on the other side. He was a Kansas City backer. And Ski, I think, liked Kansas City this week too. But I just knew that with the start they had, that there was no way that Joe Burrow wasn't going to give his best effort. Jamar Chase and those guys are pros, the competitive kids. And most of all, that defensive coordinator has really mastered, you know, that Kansas City offense. Not mastered it, but, you know, no one can stop Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, but they can slow him down, and that's what he does. He does a really good job of keeping them in games. And Britt Taylor, good cornerback for Cincinnati, talked it, backed it up with a huge interception, kind of OBJ reminiscent in that game. And we'll talk about it, as I said later, a lot of controversy in that one. What do you think about Bryce Young, one of the 0-2 teams? His young coach, Dave Canales, is already panicking, and he obviously doesn't like Bryce Young because he's pretty much putting the blame at his footsteps. We'll see this weekend when Carolina plays the Raiders. Is he correct when he puts a veteran out there, Andy Dalton, to run his system? But what do you think about Carolina benching Bryce Young?
Bryce Young might not be an NFL quarterback, but blaming him for that situation is absolutely ridiculous to me. I mean, they just miss on draft picks left and right. They trade away their best players for draft picks that they don't hit on. You know, they drafted Mingo last year. He doesn't look like an NFL wide receiver. They drafted Leggett this year. He doesn't look like an NFL wide receiver. So you're missing on the picks like that. They did improve the offensive line. Let's give them credit there. A little bit of bad luck losing their best defensive lineman, but the injuries happen to every team throughout the year. I mean, look at Cincinnati, their defensive line. They're missing like four players on their defensive line, and we're not ready to count them out yet. This whole team is replete with talent. I think there's tiers, and the Panthers are a tier of their own on the bottom, and it starts with the owner. This could be Daniel Snyder 2.0, a guy who makes a ton of money in the business world and just really doesn't understand the football world with all the meddling. That being said, they can turn it around. They didn't invest $40 million in Daniel Jones like the Giants did, right? They're not sitting on a huge contract, so they have salary cap space. They just need to start hitting on these draft picks. But they ran a fairly good coach, Frank Reich, out the door for the new flavor of the month, Dave Canales. And I don't know if anybody could win with that system or with that level of talent there. So
they undermined Frank Reich. Frank Reich is a quarterback guru. He's played the position himself in the league. And as a backup quarterback, who knows the game better than backup quarterbacks? You can look like far and beyond in the history of this league. We've noticed that backup quarterbacks, much like catchers in Major League Baseball, just have a different eye for the game from the perspective that they have, you know, with them being in the meetings with the offense, with the OC, with the quarterback, and also from the sidelines watching the games in real action. He told them he wanted Stroud. Yeah. He was buddying up to CJ Stroud. He basically told CJ Stroud at the workout, I'm taking you. So that was from up top because the owner had a love for Bryce Young because Bryce Young was a little bit more popular than CJ Stroud. As you know, he was Heisman Trophy winning with Alabama, you know, good looking kid, good smile, nice guy, great family. So he felt that Carolina could invest more in him and that CJ Stroud, wouldn't sell as many tickets. And if he would have just, went with football and trusted his football people, then it might be, a different story. But I actually think that Bryce Young would have been successful in Houston. I don't think he would be facing the problems he's now with the type of coach that we have. D'Amico would have put him in a great position. Slork would have changed the offense up where it would have, played to his strengths instead of just saying what obviously Canales is doing. This is my system, run it. That's not how things work. Any smart coach, the first thing you say to a kid like Bryce Young, who's undersized but has shown over his lifetime of playing football, he was successful in college football. He was successful in high school football. He was a winner on both levels. It wasn't like he sucked. He won championships in high school, and he was great at Alabama as well. Okay, he wins the Heisman Trophy. That isn't just because the guys he has around him. He still has to make these passes. We've seen some great film on Bryce Young when he was at Alabama. The first thing you do as a competent offensive coach when you're talking to Bryce Young is, what were your favorite plays at Alabama? Give me a list of them. Write them down for me. And as a coach, you go look at the film, see those plays that he likes, and either do a derivative of it or run the same damn play. It's just football. But instead, these guys try to take these kids and mold them into offenses that fit their perspective of running an NFL offense. And some of these guys don't have those qualities in their game, to play in that type of system. And that's what I think is going on with Canales. I pray to God that our Raiders, your Raiders is a real fan of mine because I live in Vegas now. I hope that they make a trade for Bryce Young. It was a lot of noise that they wanted him in the past. And I know Antonio Pierce is really building a great foundation. Max Crosby is about to be the leader of that team. Devonta Adams. The Raiders are going to be back to being the Raiders, a rugged team that throw the ball deep to Devonta Adams and play great defense. They need a trigger man because Minshew isn't, he's not going to be the guy there. And I think they might be looking at Shedeur Sanders if something doesn't go right where they can move up and get him. I don't know if his dad lets him go play for the Giants. He is playing with the Giants' old head coach as the OC right now. So I'm sure he have a lot to say about that conversation when it goes down because we know that Prime is going to do just like the Mannings do with their children. You got to put them in the right position to succeed because my dad's a pro and has been through this and knows what's going on. Archie Manning suffered in New Orleans and he vowed to never let his son suffer the same way. And it's pretty cool to spread that Archie Manning's grandson, Arch, plays just like him instead of playing like, his uncles.
Yeah. And that's a fun prospect, too. So I can't wait till he's ready to come out.
He's going to be one of the best we've seen. I think he's on that luck level. You know, like, he got it all, man. I like that kid a lot. He has it all. Speaking of Shedeur Sanders, a lot of noise about the Colorado State situation. Different people. Once again, we deal with this crazy media stuff. They pick people that they choose, you know, to attack and that they don't like. We know that Coach Prime's into it with a couple of these media outlets. He specifically called out CBS, one of the, you know, original networks in America. So you're dealing with some powerful people there. So he's getting a lot of bad press. His kids getting a lot of bad press. A lot of noise coming to Colorado is from the outside, but people think it's from the inside. They're just really going about their business and doing what they've always done, even before they came to Colorado, and that's being big on social media because they make a lot of money marketing themselves on social media. Coach Prime is smart enough to have all his kids involved in where the easy checks are coming right now, with a market that is paying, and that's social media. So all of those kids are doing their thing. A lot of people are jealous of it. And one of them was the Nicolosi Fowler kid for Colorado State. He said that, you know, how many followers he has can't win him any games. And so after the game, Shedeur Sanders, when they meet, he kind of tells him, like, dude, you can't F with me. Like, you talking noise, but, bro, you didn't back it up. We came to your field and we blew you out. He shook everybody's hands. They had their words. To me, it's nothing. It's like, you guys forgave Blunt for knocking out a Boise State guy. You know what I'm saying? Doing the thing. You act like this kid did something just because he didn't shake a hand. Like, I don't understand the hate that they give with this kid.
Yeah, obviously, Deion is pretty polarizing, and that's trickling down onto Shedeur. But, hey, real quick, I want to go back to some of these 0-2 teams because I'll be honest, I'm not sure what to make of it. I wrote an article for Nuke the House today, and I said, the only true wisdom is in knowing you know nothing, because that's how it feels for the NFL this year. Dogs of 6 points or more have covered every single spread this year. So sportsbooks, we make our numbers, the sportsbooks put up the numbers, and, you know, we can't figure out which of these teams are supposed to be winning. First one I want to know about, because I can't decide about this guy. Obviously, he's not good right now, right? If we're betting week three, I'm not excited about backing Will Levis. But do you think he has a future in the NFL, or is he going to be one and done like some of these other big arm kids that can't figure out how to throw underneath?
I remember when Will Levis was first put in a discussion with C.J. Stroud and Bryce Young, and how I told everyone that Will Levis wasn't going to be a good pro. Yeah. And he's done a really good job of, you know, maintaining and sticking. I think he's with an organization who obviously wants him to do well. I think he's with an ownership group that wants to see him become the face of that team. His decision-making, I told you guys from the beginning, he reminds me a lot of the kid on do you remember the movie with Kevin Costner, and he's the GM for the Cleveland Browns?
The Draft Day.
Draft day.
Something like that.
You remember the quarterback? And I told you, he reminded me of that story about the quarterback on there, that he got a big arm guy, great smile. None of his teammates like him, though. None of the teammates are coming to the birthday parties, you know, because he's just not a good dude. He's a selfish guy. And so that was the problem, that when I dug into Will Levis, I already saw his tape, and kind of like Bo Nix, I didn't like his decision making. I didn't like the pulse that he showed when the temperature was turned up in these big games in the SEC. But I also gave him the benefit of the doubt that he was playing with lesser competition. So maybe that had something to do with it. But it's just that he never seemed to lift his teams up and take them over the hump against, you know, major teams in that conference. Fast forward now, they get rid of Malik Willis. They've done everything to make him, you know, things come perform. He thinks he has swag, has some heart, you know, but he's just decision-making, man, when it really counts, has improved to be any different than I saw in the SEC, and that's that he melts down when, you know, things are serious, when it's money time, when it's money downs, you can't really count on him. So he's a young kid. Let's see if he grows. I'm rooting for any young man that's playing quarterback to do well, but between his ears has always been the problem for me with Will Levis.
Yeah, and I'm rooting for him too, but after what I've seen so far, I'm not hopeful. It just seems, you know, especially as older guys, we fall in love with those big arm guys because they remind us of our number one prospects in the past. But you got to be able to compete underneath, especially right now with these defensive line. The offensive linemen don't get enough time to practice. The defensive linemen are better than ever. There's too much pressure, and you got to be able to move the ball down the field and not just hit those huge 60 yards plays. New York Giants, a team I want to talk to you about. It seems pretty obvious to me that they're going to be moving on from Daniel Jones. But what do you expect from this team moving forward this season? Are they going to be one of the worst teams in football, or do you think they'll ever put together a little run of 3 to 4 games where they're able to look like a competent team?
This weekend, I was in the book with Skeet, and I was more focused on, you know, I had a lot of money on the Vikings. I had a lot of money as well on during that window time. I think I jumped in live and I took the Browns. So I was dealing with those two games right there, though. So I was really more focused on them, as we were just talking about, I think a show ago, about when you're in the book, how there's so much stuff going on.
Yeah.
You can't really, you know, focus on one thing. I peek up to the Giants game because I want to see Jaden Daniels a little bit, but offensively, I don't even pay attention to Daniel Jones. I don't even want to see him. Like, I've seen enough of it. All I'm going to do is be mad that Malik Nabers is open and beating his man and he's not delivering the ball. So we already know what it is with the Giants. They'll be drafting the quarterback. People are saying that they're projected to be have the second worst record in the NFL this season, that they're going to go for Shedeur Sanders. Like I said, I think a lot of that depends on the information that his offensive coordinator gives back to Deion Sanders about that organization, because I really think they try to make
sure
they
all keep the job.
Yeah, Dayball's not going anywhere. The Mara family has shown a lot of patience over the years.
I don't think it's his fault.
No, he didn't want him. That's the Mara family has done really well with doing things their way. They have a model for football that they've been using for many years, and now they're going to have to twerk it, you know, a little bit. They're going to have to tinker with it and change some things because they saw Daniel Jones and thought that he was Eli Manning 2.0 because he could, like, he looks like him. He's the same measurements, all of these things, but with speed. But the problem is Daniel Jones just isn't Eli Manning. Eli Manning, you know, has special DNA, and he was one of those guys who found a way to make plays when necessary in big moments in the NFL. And we haven't seen anything to make us think that about Daniel Jones or suggest that he'll turn the corner.
Another controversial quarterback, fantasy darling, Anthony Richardson. He can definitely get it done on the ground. Feels a lot like Will Levis to me. Other than the deep ball, what does Richardson bring into the table? Do you think that he can be developed, or is this another lost cause?
You remember that I told you guys, stop believing in Anthony Richardson. Anthony Richardson, he's just a project, basically. And he'll be a long time before he's a finished product, because he has not played enough quarterback meaningful snaps against meaningful competition, because he stayed injured in Florida. And since he's been with the Colts, he's been injured. And so now he's back playing this year. He has not seen a lot of defenses. He hasn't had a lot of time to process just the art of playing quarterback. How many camps have we heard of Anthony Richardson going to? We've seen C.J. Stroud, Bryce Young in camps since they were kids. You ever saw Anthony Richardson in the camp? I didn't. So he's just learned how to play quarterback, man. He's just an unbelievable athlete that they're attempting to make a quarterback. Whereas in Cam Newton, for instance, was an unbelievable athlete that was going to these passing camps and was, you know, being schooled on how to play quarterback early in his life. So Anthony Richardson is just going to have to learn on the go, because they don't have time, and it's going to end up where he ends up being the one who suffers because he won't get another contract, because when they do the numbers, he's going to be unplayable because he turns the ball over too much, and running as much as he does isn't sustainable. He's going to get hurt. So it's just going pretty much like I thought. That's why I'm glad this Green Bay game, that was another one I bet. I took Green Bay, as you know, plus the points and money line strictly off my handicap about the Green Bay Packers.
You told me that too, and I was thinking that line was going to run. You knew something happened when that line didn't run, because one of the things I like about you know, my little part-time work and hanging out with the guys and the normal guys, you get a real feel for the real public, right? Don't give me these betting splits on Tuesday. I told my buddy when we were at the book last week, he goes, well, the public's on this, and shows me some thing. I go, bro, the Publix's right there because it's 9 a.m. and the line is like all the way to the elevator. I go, that's the Publix. Right. They're not betting till Sunday morning. You're not getting these accurate splits here. But everybody was on the Colts. And I said, everybody's on the Colts and the lines ain't moving. It's because they know that, number one, Richardson's not that much better than Malik Willis, right? All I heard all week was, I'm fading Malik Willis. I'm fading Malik Willis. I'm like, what's the difference in these two players? Literally, what's the difference? Like, Richardson's a little bigger. He can break tackles. But other than that, they're about the same passing. Willis got a cannon, too. Willis can throw
the ball, too. Now I have a different advantage that the public doesn't consider spread, and that's coaching. We talked about that distinctly, me and you, about I think that Matt LaFleur would be the best influence ever in Malik Willis's life. But how different did Malik Willis look after being with him for 2 weeks and having a whole week with him as the number one guy? Matt LaFleur is a good coach, man.
And he's probably smart enough to do exactly what you said. He probably pulled up some Liberty tape. What works? Let's install these four plays, and then we're going to hand the ball to our beast that we paid. And don't think that I'm not missing Josh Jacobs as a Raiders fan, because I think he could have been the difference in this offense right now.
Man, I had a touchdown parlay. Don't even bring Josh Jacobs up, spread. I had a touchdown parlay going, man. It had Justin Jefferson on it. It had Kamara on it. It had Breece Hall on it, and it had Josh Jacobs. And
man, he got Harrison just on gave one of his to Jacobs. Kamara broke the slate this week.
He fumbled, man. He fumbled on the goal line on it, man. I couldn't believe he did that. But they have some good receivers. They can run simple stuff, man, and those kids are going to be wide open. He just had to complete the passes. I got to keep my eye on the numbers. It might be a little overreaction, but I think I might like the Packers leading into this week going to Tennessee, just off the simple fact we got two ex-Titans. Matt LaFleur started off as the offensive coordinator there, so he's going to want to come over there and do well. And then we have Malik Willis, and I'm sure the team's going to rally around him and say, those guys forgot all about you. And as everyone knows, Malik Willis is one of the best human beings in the NFL, really a kind-hearted, good kid. And so I think that his team will want to, you know, play their best to try to get him in there and get a victory. So I think that the Packers might be live this weekend.
Los Angeles Rams are just destroyed by injuries. I don't even really know what to say. I mean, they're missing their two top receivers. They're missing offensive linemen, and they're missing key players on each level of the defense. They're missing defensive line. They're missing linebackers. They're missing secondary. What do we do with this team? In my mind, it just seems like it's over. It just feels like it's over. Like, what do you do? And it's not even anybody's fault. It's kind of bad luck.
Chickens coming home to roost on their coach, man. It's just simple as that. And what he did is he ran Cooper Kupp into the ground. As I told you, he saw Cooper Kupp as himself, man. He was a little receiver, you know, a little undersized, quick. And when Cooper Kupp was eating, he didn't give him a break, man. He was averaging, 10 to 14 receptions, 150 yards, 2 touchdowns a game. Like, it was a year where Cooper Kupp could have been MVP of the league. He was the best player in the league. And the kind of cuts that you make at wide receiver, especially as a slot receiver like Cooper Kupp was, that works from the inside, man, it's too much wear and tear on your ligaments. It just is. And I know that his coach wasn't trying to do it. He was just like trying, like, I'm going to get this guy to the Hall of Fame because he's that type of guy and he's that good. He works that hard. He deserves it. And he probably still goes, because Cooper Kupp is fringe Hall of Fame already, I'd say, even if he doesn't play another snap off of winning the Super Bowl and the kind of numbers he put up during his career. Anyone who watched Cooper Kupp has to say he was one of the best receivers in the league during his time playing there. Like, no one would disagree about that. So maybe, you know, everything that was should have been done was done by McVay. But McVay has a tree. McVay's a young OG. You know, like, he doesn't have a bad life. He don't have to win another one for the next 5 years. You think he's going to get any pressure from the Rams ownership? Like, he brought a Super Bowl there. He's got a beautiful young wife. He's working out there, living the life on the beach, about to probably have some kids. His number one guy, Aaron Donald, just retired on him, you know, in the middle. Still the top defender in the league, but he's ready to chill as well. McVay might be on the TV next year. That's what he might do. He might, if he's not up to it. Now, if he's up to it and has the, you know, like, because if you think about it, Sean McVay, even though he's young as hell, me and Sean McVay probably same age. That dude's been coaching probably like 15 years straight already. because he was an assistant for so many years before he became a head coach. He's been with the Rams a second now, you know, so maybe had some burnout because this year, like you said, it's like so much. Anything that could have went wrong has went wrong with their season.
And to me, it's almost better, though, because they weren't contenders anyways. Now they can get a top pick.
Colin Cowherd said they were going to contend for the NFC Championship.
Yeah, but he has to say stuff every single day. He has 3 hours to fill every day. You're going to find, right? I mean, we get to just get on here and say what we want, right? When we're done, we just hit stop. He's got to go 3 hours Monday through Friday. You're going to say some crazy stuff. But my point is, hopefully he's up to it because I think they have a great opportunity to rebuild. I think Stafford's still got three more years maybe at top, and you can bring in, if you get a top five pick and you don't need a quarterback, you're going to get one of the best skill players, one of the best offensive linemen, one of the best defensive linemen. They hit this year on Jared Verse. That guy's a stud.
Yeah, they might.
Right? Like, let's rebuild this team.
Travis Hunter. They might have. Yeah. They might get Travis Hunter. Hunter in L.A., that's perfect.
I'd love to see what could happen because when you have a quarterback and you're picking that high, they could even trade back and even stockpile some picks, right? Maybe it's the Raiders, right? Maybe the Raiders moving up for Shador.
I have a feeling that with the type of owner that they have, with him making so much money off that stadium, with him being one of the more power players in the NFL, I think they're going to tear it down, man. I think they're going to get rid of Stafford. I don't know if that's what I'm wondering, is McVay going to be able to weather everything? Because we know Stetson Bennett isn't the answer. So they have to get a new quarterback. Maybe build around Puka Nacua. They're going to probably end up releasing Cooper Kupp pretty soon, or either being nice enough to trade him somewhere favorable for him in the AFC or somewhere. So I think that the Rams.
I'd like to see McVay do a rebuild. I think it'd be really cool if to watch him, because it felt like he built that team the first time, you know, and he bit anything as far as I can go.
I'm not going to give him credit. He coached the hell out the team. They had one of the better GMs in the league, but his style of being a GM, I can't remember his name. He used to come on Colin all the time from the Rams. He's a hell of a GM. His style of general managing was going to burn out fast because he did that free agent. Remember, they just did like an NBA team. Just went after guys, you know. They just started grabbing people and buying and bought a team. You know, like, we're in L.A., we're about to win it. So – that was his style. It was very aggressive. It worked. I think the downfall of the Rams kind of began with Cam Akers. I think Cam Akers, they thought was going to be a much bigger star, that he was going to stick. And then whatever happened with him and McVay, it kind of changed everything, if you remember that moment in time. Because before that, he was on the way to being a star, you know, and he was the offense, you know, had replaced what's my guy from Georgia name who got hurt. Yeah, Gurley had replaced Todd Gurley, who kind of retired early, you know, had injury issues, and he seemed like a better version, and he was going to be like the, you know, engine to that offense, and I don't know what happened. I hear a lot of different crazy rumors about what happened with him and McVay, but it was personal.
All right, final team, I got to get your thoughts on this 0-2. I really thought this was going to be the breakout year of Trevor Lawrence, man. And we're seeing nothing but average play. I mean, he's an average quarterback right now. I mean, he's like number 15 in the league, right? I mean, like, obviously he's better than Levis and Jones, right? And he's a tier above those guys. But he's not elite. He's not carrying his team. And you can't really blame the organization, right? It's not like they didn't try to give him. Brian Thomas is fantastic. If it wasn't for Malik Nabers, Brian Thomas is probably the best rookie of the year, right? I mean, he's right up there with Marvin Harrison in my mind. As the ability to change a game. Christian Kirk's in there. Evan Ingram's a great player. The defense isn't awesome. They screwed that Aiden Hutchinson pickup, right? I mean, they should have taken Hutchinson, but it's not the end of the world. This is a solid team, and when you look at it, you know, it's the quarterback play, in my mind, that's keeping them mediocre. Is this time to give up on the Trevor dream? Is he just never going to be the guy we wanted?
He's a kid, young guy. Got married really young. So that's one thing you got to remember when you look at Trevor.
I usually like that. I like the stability. No,
right. But now what if him and his wife are having growing pains, right? I'm just throwing different stuff out here. None of it's sticking to the wall. It's just how I do things. I kind of like, you know, think about the whole human. Because we're just thinking about football. Most people, you know, I cap a little bit different. I look at these things a little bit different from a human perspective as well. Okay, so he might be 25, 26 now, 24. He's up in that age range. Him and his wife are young kids married. This Instagram world, I don't know if he got any new kids, but it's a lot changing and it's a lot going on at his age. How much of his attention now is Doug Peterson getting? Is Doug Peterson getting through to him? Because we know Doug Peterson can coach. We also saw what happened with Doug Peterson and his other quarterback, Carson Wentz, with Philadelphia. Carson Wentz flashed and then he fizzled out. Remember?
Yeah.
Burnt out quick. So Doug's a Monroe, Louisiana guy. Doug's a tough ass. He's a hard ass. He's an ex-quarterback himself, another backup quarterback that understands from a different perspective. He's been with the best, Andy Reid's all-time greatest assistant, his favorite guy. He can call Andy Reid for anything. He used to play for him and he coached for him. He kind of molded his career. Won a championship with Philadelphia. He knows what he's doing. But how is his relationship with Trevor Lawrence? Why isn't he getting through? They've gotten him weapons. They even added Gabe Davis. They have all types of weapons. Travis Etienne is good. He's a good running back, you know, and they're running him like a dog. He's getting 26, 30 carries a game because they're trying to protect Trevor so much. So why isn't Trevor seeing the field? Why isn't Trevor executing? I don't know, but I think that he's too good of a player and has too much pride. Maybe get his focus this weekend. I'll probably be on them against the Bills.
All right, yeah, that's my biggest disappointment. And I took a lot of him in best ball year thinking that it was going to be his breakout year. You know, obviously two games isn't enough to close the chapter on this book. But, yeah, I was hoping to see more for him, right? He was supposed to be the next Andrew Luck, the next Elway, right? He was the greatest prospect we've seen. And now it's not bad. I mean, I guess that's a good thing about getting him, right? I mean, he's right. Serviceable, but he's not the game changer that we expected. Anything more on 0-2 teams before we jump into the past?
Roll to the past.
All right. Good weekend for us, especially in the college football world. You gave out UNLV plus 9 over Kansas. You sprinkled that money line as well. Cash both tickets. Talk to me about what you saw in that game.
Just a good performance by UNLV. You got Barry Odom, that's just a really good coach, and he has these guys believing. He has these guys ready to show the world there's a new UNLV. Like, they're going to be the trailblazers that start a brand new tradition. They have the money, they have the backing, they have the right school, they have the right city. So I'm really proud of these guys. As I told you, Matt Sluka, he's a weird quarterback. He reminds me, as I said, of Jim McMahon. He's just going out there to play. He can't really throw. You know, he's kind of fast, but not really. But he just can make things happen because of just heart, man, and determination. And he carried that team through. And even though he was 7-18 for only one touchdown, man, he still was the best player on the field, man. Just some huge effort plays by him. And, you know, UNLV keeps it close. They steal it at the end. DeJesus did not play well. He dropped a big ball at the beginning of the game. Ricky White was kind of shut down. But UNLV would refuse to lose, as I said. Just a lot of heart by Matt Sluka. Enjoyed that one a lot watching it at Westgate.
All right, great call for you there. Alabama just smashed Wisconsin as a 16-point favorite.
Easy spot there for us. Little sweat on the minus 9. Wisconsin was driving. They missed a field goal with about a minute left, but it didn't really matter because Alabama scored a touchdown in 3 passes the next time they got the ball, which I think they would have done even if they had made the field goal and made the score get down to, I think, would have went to 8 or something like that. It would have been 14-6 or something like that. But they missed, and we get an easy cover. Alabama looks good. Caleb DeBoer, not going to be any drop-off for them offensively. Defense looks good as well. Perfect man to replace Nick Saban, man. I think that he does well with the keys. Pretty too much good. Of Maybach over there in Alabama. Wisconsin, tough loss for them. They lose Tyler Van Dyke in the first quarter. Gets tackled, scrambling on the sidelines. But he wasn't doing much either. But hopefully that kid heals up and gets well. Alabama's just a different class than Wisconsin.
LSU headed to South Carolina. I missed that game. What did you see in that one?
Hell of a game. Took your money line with the clients. I knew before the game, as I told you, we talked it out. I said if I would have played a side by a spread, I would have laid the points for LSU. Glad I didn't. We took a money line minus 240. I'd rather pay that much, but I knew the LSU would find a way to win. They have a really successful record against South Carolina over the years. It seems like Brian Kelly has Shane Beamer's number. Big, big second half by LSU. They outscore South Carolina 20-9. Nussmeier, oh, man, I don't think he's a difference maker enough. I mean, he can complete some balls. You know, his stats are never bad because he got great players around him. He goes 24 for 40, 285, two touchdowns, interception. But it's just something about Nussmeier when it matters the most to me. It seems like he can't get it done. Good running back, though. And Caden Durham. Caden Durham is finally getting his chances, and this kid can play. If he can take over that backfield, I think that he could be a difference maker for LSU. South Carolina has some internal issues going on. Internally, I don't know what's going on between Sellers, who's the starting quarterback, Lenore Sellers, and Shane Beamer. This is, once again, they bench him during the game. They were actually leading when they benched them. They ended up losing the game. He puts in Robbie Ashford, the transfer from Auburn. But I don't know why Lenore Sellers and Beamer seem like they don't like each other, man. And I think the Sellers will be in the transfer portal, and he'll be one of those guys that kind of like Dampier out of New Mexico. They all can be really some game changers that become national names with the right coaching. So keep your eyes on Lenore Sellers from South Carolina going to transfer portal. I do not think that him and Beamer are getting along with South Carolina. Great win for LSU. Come on, Brian Kelly. You got to get our guys tough again.
Finally, Washington State gets the upset. It was on a neutral, but it was in Seattle. So, but those Pullman fans travel. What did you think of Washington State grabbing the Apple Cup this year?
One of my bigger plays, man. I played it that morning. I took Washington State plus 6 when it ran up that high, and then I jumped in and got a little money line live. Just a really good effort. As I told you guys, with the breaking up of the Pac-12, Coach Dickert and his team will be ready to play. Washington State has a sound defense. They have more, continuity, a better foundation right now than Washington Huskies. A lot of turnover. Caleb DeBoer took some players. He left. He was the foundation of that team. They lost a lot of guys to the NFL draft, including Michael Penix. So they had to replace all that stuff. And coming in, they have Jed Fish, who took the job from Arizona and came over there. And he just, you know, it takes a couple years to get your guys in there. Will Rogers, not a good quarterback. He wasn't able to get it done when it counted. Solid victory by Washington State. Their coach was really, really amped after that. The clock was ticking out. That was personal. But I can tell you one thing, I think it affects them this week coming up on a short week, and we're going to try to take advantage of it.
All right. You ready to move over to the wild world of the NFL?
Let's do it.
All right. I know you had to be happy, and I was as well, because most of these shows I do, all I hear is Derek Carr sucks, Derek Carr this, Derek Carr that. And you know what? I don't think that he's a top 5, top 10 guy, right? I don't think that he can lead. Like, I don't think he'd be good on Carolina, right? I think that if you put them in the right position, he's serviceable, just like Jared Goff. Just like Jared Goff. Jared Goff is not going to take a 1-16 team and make them good. But you put him in the right situation, and he's going to do what the coach asks. And that's what I saw this weekend. And you can say 11 for 16 all you want. He only threw 11. Watch the tape. Watch the throw that he put to Shaheed. Couldn't have been any better. Watch the touchdown pass to Olave. It's a perfect throw. Now we're not running that old Sean Payton New York Giants offense from 20 years ago. You got Kubiak running the Shanahan system, which seems to be what the whole NFL is doing right now, and he's doing it properly. What does that mean? We're not going to drop the quarterback 50 times. We're not going to drop him back. We're going to run the ball. And guess what? We forgot how good Alvin Kamara really is. You get him some blocking, he's going to take advantage of it. I love the way this team is playing, and I believe this is the most underrated defense in football. They could come crashing back to earth, but right now I'm loving the Saints. I think they're going to win the South, and I think they got a chance to really do some things in the playoffs if they're able to get some home field advantage, because we know how that Superdome gets. My main concern is I don't think the NFL wants them to win, right? Maybe it's a replay of that year that the Rams, you know, were able to get to the Super Bowl with that terrible call that made me delete every NFL podcast I had because I was so pissed. But talk to me about the Saints, man. You got to be happy. I'm loving what I'm seeing from this team.
Talking about pleasant surprises. This was one of the most pleasant surprises of my life, because the Saints showed nothing in preseason for me to believe this. They showed nothing the last couple seasons since they had Derek Carr as the quarterback and Dennis Allen as the coach. And I wanted both. After they signed Derek Carr, I was like, but at least he's, you know, a professional. I begged for Dennis Allen because he was so good as a defensive coordinator. He had had his shot with the Raiders with you guys. He stunk over there. And I was like, he probably learned a lot from being under one of the best coaches the NFL has had the last 20 years in Sean Payton. So I was all for keeping the, you know, consistency of having him in the building. Now he's giving me everything that I knew that he could do. You know, like, we knew that Dennis Allen is a great defensive coordinator. It's all about, remember we said in the offseason, hiring. Can Dennis Allen hire the right OC? Because he still had the same Sean Payton people there in the past. He finally went out on a limb and did his own thing outside of the Sean Payton tree. And when he did, he finally struck gold for the black and gold. The hiring of Clint Kubiak is probably the biggest hire of the season in the NFL. It's changed everything, because now we have a guy who's built Derek Carr's confidence back. DC was just, you know, lacking confidence, man. He's looking like his old self again. We know he's a big Kobe Bryant guy, so we know he's competitive. You know, his brother talked about when they used to play basketball, he used to beat his ass, you know, so we know that Derek Carr had some fight in him somewhere, but he had lost it, man. And, you know, somehow Clint Kubiak has found it again. You see him scoring touchdowns and doing a Michael Jackson and grabbing his crotch and stuff at the Cowboys fans. I'm like, wow, where did this Derek Carr come from? And then they go in the locker room and Dennis Allen's breaking it down and talking about sometimes you got to pop up and show him like Kendrick Lamar. And I'm like, is it possible that our owner called and hired somebody to make some clones of these guys? Because this can't be the real Dennis Allen. This can't be Derek Carr, man. I know things got pretty high tech. And this business is playing with a lot of dough. So I think she hired some clones or something, because this can't be the Derek Carr, Dennis Allen, and we is who that family know running this organization.
They just been living in Louisiana too long. It's rubbing off on them, right? You live, you know, winning Romans, you live in Romans.
But the thing that I like most about this team, we already knew they had defense. They got some of the best defenders in the NFL, all playing on the same side of the ball. You got Pete Warner, so underrated. Of course, DeMario Davis, all pro year in, year out. Tyrann Mathieu, Hall of Famer, you know. Then you already got the leader in Cam Jordan up front. These guys have all of the special defensive players in all the right spots that you want them. You got the right man, the crazy scientist in the lab drawing up things. Because you remember Dennis Allen, why I love him so much. He's the only guy that could beat Brady. So you know he knows what he's doing on defense. He's the only guy that could beat Brady. If he plays Mahomes right now, he's going to give him hell. Because now the defense has a reason to play, because they know that the offense is competent. In the past, the defense would just tap out. They're like, we're tired of just stopping people. We're getting big plays, and the offense is not doing jack, you know? So now they're fired up. The Saints have not been stopped on offense all year. Every time they've had the ball this season, they've scored. That's unbelievable. That's outstanding. And like I said, Clint Kubiak is that guy. New superstar. In New Orleans, no Michael Thomas, who cares? Rashid Shaheed. This young kid is amazing, man. He's a speedster. He has different type of speed. He has that type of speed that you got to respect, that changes and flips the field. And he's leaving guys by 20 yards, making it a lot easier for Alvin Kamara, you know, to run underneath. You got Olave still working underneath, you know, great hands. Just, man, the Saints were a great surprise, and as a lifelong Saints fan, I couldn't be more happier. And I think they're here to stay. I don't think this is a fluke.
All right, five-star. We do like the underdogs, but I did take a favorite, and that was on Monday night. And how disappointed was I? I thought we were going to get the late cover. We're up 21-15. And I'm thinking, okay, we got this. Barkley drops a pass. And then Vic Fangio runs one of the most gutless defensive schemes I've seen and just allows Kirk Cousins and that team to get in a rhythm. The only good thing I had was being able to watch the Manning cast and watch those guys get so excited to see Kirk Cousins drive this team down the field. I guess it's better for the NFL. I didn't think that Cousins was going to be able to come back from the injury. It looks like he's going to be okay, and I know that's better from the NFL. But I'll tell you what, as a better, that loss stung for me. Talk to me about what you saw and where do we go from here? Obviously, we upgrade the Falcons because I was worried that Cousins wasn't going to be able to compete physically. I'm fine with upgrading the Falcons. That makes plenty of sense. What do we do with Philadelphia, and what did you see in that game? Because I don't know what to make of the Eagles now. I mean, that was really – I thought this was going to be a defensive-oriented team, and that was really poor by their defense at the end of that game.
You like that?
I did not like that. No, I did not. I liked the 21-15, let the under hit, and let my minus 5.5.
I wish you would have texted me. I know you do your own thing too, though. But man, we was on the Falcons, man. I had the group on the Falcons because everything was just the perfect formula for the Falcons to play well. Honestly, the Eagles had the game, and I still should have covered, and the money line for the Eagles should have won. Sirianni is a frat boy, and he did frat boy type of play calling. It's no reason to throw that ball to Saquon Barkley unless he told Barkley, when you catch it, slide down, and then we're just going to run clock. All game, Jalen Hurts has showed that he was getting whatever he wanted on the ground. They could have just kept the ball with Jalen Hurts twice, and it was first down and take a knee, and the game's over, and you win by 3 points. And I thought that was what was going to happen. Try some dumb stuff and throws the ball to Saquon. Saquon drops it, and now karma kicks in. One, you made a bad play call there by attempting to throw the ball when you should be running the clock. They don't have any more timeouts, idiot. Second, you're running down the sidelines with Gardner Johnson like he made a great play when he clearly pulled off his helmet and did some bonehead stuff, and you're encouraging it. Like, yeah, he made the tackle, good play, but now you so about yourself and me, that you're taking off your helmet, and they've been clowning him. They got a little meme they do where it's like Kobe in heaven looking down.
Looking down on Pitt.
Gardner Johnson decided to wear number 8 for Kobe, and he's out there getting, like, burnt, getting, like, schooled in the open field, getting, like, he's trying to make tackles, getting shook. But he's once again doing some silly stuff because I used to kind of like him on New Orleans, but the Saints got rid of him because he doesn't understand the temperature of the room. Sometimes he's such a loudmouth, and he did some silly. And Sirianni's back in that mess, running with him. Sirianni's not going to last in Philadelphia. Remember,
I don't think he makes it through the year unless there's some turnaround. The only thing is, the team's so talented, they might turn around. I mean, it's not like.
He's not going to last, man. Sirianni doesn't have the right mind state for this job. I wouldn't be surprised if he's partying a lot, too. That's the face I get from him. You know what I mean? So I think he's a nerd that's, you know, hit the jackpot, went to the Super Bowl his first year with the Eagles as the coach, and now he's living out all his little dreams or whatever, and he's forgetting what this thing is really about. And, you know, that's about being a professional, man. It's no way you as a coach should be running down the sideline. You know I hate that. Remember when that's what made me get your ass down and get ready for the next play. What are you doing, man? You know, like, your temperament is what the team is going to do. So if you out there on all that fired up stuff, yeah, they're going to do it too. Just like Raheem Morris on the other side of the field. He's stoic all through the game. But, you know, him and Mike Tomlin came up together. They're from that little group of coaches under Tony Dungy. They're, you know, like, they're going to be focused on the game. After the game, did you see when he hit the locker room after they won? They're going crazy. He turned it up with them there. But on the sidelines, man, it's just a certain type of etiquette that you're supposed to have because your team is in battle, man. They have to trust that their leader is sound and not like them. He's above them. He has enough emotional stability to hold himself during really crucial times and to stay focused. So you can't be running up and down the sideline celebrating like you're a player, man. Like, so I don't like that, but he was doing that mess. And sure enough, it ended up where everything came back around. The Eagles won. Bijan Robinson is a dog. He's one of the best players in the NFL already as a youngster. Now, do they wear him out? He got a lot of plays, take some kind of hard hits They need to run Algier just a little bit more, I think. Like, you know, maybe make it keep it to where Bijan is getting 15 carries a game, you know, 10 looks on at passing. Stop right now that 20 and 20 they're doing. That's too much, you know. So they're going to have to do that. What Kirk Cousins did, he had a night. He's not sustainable, I don't think, because he still seems to me that, you know, he doesn't have complete confidence in his legs right now. You know, he's fresh off that injury. I could tell he doesn't really want to get hit. He never did anyway. He was standing in the pocket, but no quarterback wants to get hit. Any athlete after your legs are taken from you, especially in a physical sport like football where people are always around your legs, it plays with you for a while. I remember Brady was going through it when he first came back. You know, that famous film they have where he's talking to Belichick, and Belichick, like, you threw it over his head. He's like, not that one. Oh, that one. When he was kind of shook up his first start, you know, like, it's – He had some lower extremity injuries, man, and he's having a problem dealing with that, I could tell, on the field. But when they give him a clean pocket, we know that Kirk Cousins can throw. But we see that defense Big Fangio ran. You just talked about that. Like 1984 prevent. Here, just get 15 yards every time you play. This is a new league, man. They're going to take that 15, those kids' speed to now 25 and out. And if it's timing and you're in that stupid defense, that eats up a quarter of the field, bro, every 5 seconds. Like, they were down the field in three plays. They were in the red zone.
Huge win for the Falcons. Save their season because they face a tough game this Sunday night hosting the Kansas City Chiefs, and they definitely did not want to fall to 0-3 with the way the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the aforementioned New Orleans Saints. We've already talked about the Green Bay Packers, but just want to reiterate once again, great call there. And we definitely, right, we were on the book side there because everybody loved Indy, and we were able to get that cash. Let's talk about a couple teams that we have yet to talk about, and that's the Minnesota Vikings and the San Francisco 49ers. Not as bad as the Rams, but the 49ers suffering some injury issues at their as well, losing Christian McCaffrey and now Deebo Samuel. And I thought Samuel was poised for a big year. He came into camp looking healthy. He got all the extra work with Ayuk sitting. Now it's going to be Ayuk's time to prove that he deserves that contract. So the 49ers are what they are. They're still going to be a great team. They just got to get healthy, but they might not. I want to talk to you about the Minnesota Vikings. Is this team a flash in the pan, or are they legit? Because I think that's the bigger question coming out of this game.
Before the season started with the Vikings, the first thing that I was wondering was Sam Darnold. If he could play like he's playing now, then they are, because we know I'm high on Kevin O'Connell. I think he's a great coach. His hiring of Brian Flores changed everything about that team's future and their ability to contend, because they're in the same situation like the Mike Ditka days with Buddy Ryan, where it's two separate teams that they have two head coaches. Brian Flores is such a powerful figure, such a stern individual. His defense is going to listen to him and do what he says to do. And it's a perfect combination because Kevin O'Connell is very cerebral. So with new ways of playing offense, they're running some stuff. He's dialing it up on the offensive side of getting Justin Jefferson wide open. So it's a perfect combination. They got maybe the best staff right now at the top two positions in the NFL. And it shows by them going 2-0, even though they have Sam Darnold as the quarterback, and he hasn't done much in the league before now. Cut down on his turnover somewhat. Just a great job by Kevin O'Connell. And as I said, Brian Flores is different. Brock Purdy had to tell him after the game, man, your scheme is different. I didn't see that like that. What you was running on me, man. It had him really confused. Injury reserve for McCaffrey, kind of like Sean McVay. Another thing, overusage. Shanahan ran McCaffrey into the ground. You know, he ran him way too much, trying to keep him getting these touchdown records and consecutive touchdowns and all this stuff. And they had other backs on their team that are really good that should have been getting carries, you know, taking a little bit of the workload off of McCaffrey. Now, once again, another situation where chicks are coming home to roost years later. The 49ers aren't going to be as good as you think they are, Spread. And I knew they weren't this year. And the reason why is because too much noise in the offseason. Start with Brandon Ayuk. They should have never brought Brandon Ayuk back, Spread. When a person is gone, they're gone. It's just like a relationship. The way he was tweeting and all that stuff that he was saying, they weren't ever supposed to want him back in that building. They weren't supposed. He's not that good. And now he's playing with money, but spite, because he really just didn't want to play with you guys. But you gave him so much money, his agent had to, he had to come show up and take that check. Ayuk isn't happy, man. I don't think he doesn't, I don't think he likes Shanahan. And I know he doesn't like John Lynch. He's just playing because he got the money. And now they're going to have to end up trading him. And they paid him still, because I don't think he's going to want to still stay there. It's like, he was very clear he wanted to play for Pittsburgh or Washington. He did not want to be a Niner. And he said this over and over during the offseason. And them forcing their hand and making him come back with the money was the worst decision they made. I know that locker room is, has the same type of, you know, energy that it had before. Debo, he's always hurt. He gets hurt every year. He missed 6 games a year. You might as well just chalk it in before the season starts. Debo's going to miss 6 games. So I don't know if the 49ers have a strong year. Maybe they come in as a wild card team this year, or either they have like the worst record out of all of the conference winners, so they're still like, you know, a lower seed. That's why I think they kind of fit in this year. I think they're more of a 10-7 team this year than a 12-win team, 13-win team like in the past. But as long as they get into, you know, the dance, the tournament, they have the weapons to do something if everybody comes back together and is healthy by that time. But the Vikings are overachieving, but the Vikings are a good team because Brian Flores and their defense. It's a no-name defense. It doesn't matter as long as he's calling the plays in the same way with the offense. As long as they got a good trigger man, Kevin O'Connell knows what he's doing. The Texans better be very careful this weekend.
Yeah, I think the Niners will still bounce back. That's the worst matchup for him in the NFL because we know how much Flores loves to blitz, and I don't know if other teams, even seeing what he did, would have like the acumen or even the personnel to go ahead and replicate that. But we'll see. I mean, the Niners haven't won in Minnesota since 1992 or something, so I'm not going to downgrade them too much, but we'll see what happens there. And I think the man that you mentioned is the key. Brandon Ayuk's really going to have to earn that money if that team's going to stay afloat until they get their other players back. The Chiefs were able to get the win. Did they help, the refs help KC again? For me, the play call.
What do you think?
I think the play call, the 4th and 16, that was the right call. If you're going to complain about the refs, it's all the other calls that they didn't get earlier. Because there was plenty of calls that you could have called on the Chiefs, especially when they were playing defense against Cincinnati, that were not called. So while I do believe the 4th and 16 was the correct call, I believe they were a lot more lenient on the Chiefs when it came to the defensive holding and the holding on the offensive line. And there was a lot of no calls that probably should have gone at Cincinnati's way. What did you think?
I took the Bengals, so I ended up winning with the spread, but honestly, I feel like they got job. It's like this with certain calls that are judgment calls. You can't allow those calls to, you know, be the determining point for the game. You know, like in a position like that with a team 4th and 16, if he would hit him like clearly before the ball, but the timing was just like, and the ball was kind of high. You got to have enough judgment as a ref, I feel like, to say, could this guy really have caught that ball? You know, if he would have got there. So, I just think that some of these refs, man, they have certain guys that they root for, certain teams that they're, you know, really like the staffs or like certain players, and you know, they're human. So
no, Kansas City, the Lakers, the Lakers of the NFL. Go look at the distribution. Well, my point is, they're the Lakers of the NFL, and they get a great penalty distribution every week. It seems like, you know, definitely gets the benefit of the doubt when it comes to the ref. And at the end of the day, this isn't a pure sporting event. It is a business. And we know that that's the team that brings the eyeballs to the screen, just like the Los Angeles Lakers. Your top 5 power rankings, you want to read them off for me?
So I like the Saints at number 1 right now. They've been the most impressive team in the NFL. Offense is scored on every position. You don't do that in the NFL. I don't care who you're playing against. Number 2, I'm going to go with the Texans. I think that they've shown the best all-around performances this year. Really strong defense, really good quarterback, really good schemes. Number 3, the Chiefs. They got by last week against the Bengals. Play a lot of close games. Somehow they always find a way to win them. I almost put the Bills above them, honestly, but we're going to, just because they're the defending champs, make the Chiefs number 3. Number 4, the Buffalo Bills. Sean McDermott is doing a really good job with a defense that we don't know a lot of names on it besides Ed Oliver, and he's really been playing all pro level early in the year. See if they can continue. Josh Allen's a really good quarterback. This is his first year being the guy, but he did it a lot at Wyoming where he didn't have a lot of talent around him and had to make something happen. I think he's doing a good job early doing that, and I think the Bills are one of those teams that had a really quiet offseason, and they're going to be around at the end. Number five, it's a toss-up for me between the Chargers, the Steelers, and the Vikings. All three of those teams are really good, and they have three very, very important games this weekend. The Chargers and the Steelers play each other. That's going to be a defensive battle right there, battling the trenches. And then you got Minnesota. They have my Houston Texans coming there, who I have at number two. So if Minnesota can pull off the upset, they'll definitely be in that five spot.
All right. And, well, of course, we'll be going over those games a little bit more. I spent a little more time than we wanted to, Five-Star, but I had to get your thoughts. You know, we haven't talked a lot this week. So, fortunately good, for the viewers, they got to hear it, right? Because this is what I'd normally just be asking you on the phone.
Yeah, they love talking sports with us, man. They're not worried about it. Y'all hit that like button, man. We went past the hour. We're going to probably go to about an hour and 30, but we want to get this information to you, man. It's important that we talk it out with you. Hey, we spend our time with you guys. All we ask from you to do is to hit that like button. So right now, you guys, if you're watching The Word of the World, if you're enjoying this information, hit that like button for us.
All right, let's dive right in. What's the type of cars we're going to have be the present today?
Man, let's jump in a Tesla X.
All right.
The Tesla X. And let's go to the present, man.
All right, man. You're coming off a great week in college football. We're going to look to keep it going. Stanford is plus 8.5. They're at Syracuse. The total's 57. Your thoughts on this game?
Which Ashton Daniels do we get? That's the quarterback for Stanford. Very athletic kid, about 6'2", 6'3". Troy Taylor's a really good offensive coordinator. Troy Taylor runs an offense that's more horizontal than vertical. Think around the edges, you're not protecting your edge. They can have some really big plays. Underrated offense, some really good receivers over there as well. But which Ashton Daniels do we get? He completed 82% of his passes last week. But against TCU in week one at home, he only completed 48%. He's been inconsistent his whole career. Not much of a passer, but he can get hot, and he does have the weapons around him. Kyle McCord on the other side of the ball for Syracuse has been more than consistent. He's been a really good player this year. Underrated, actually. Kyle McCord is playing a lot better than he played at Ohio State. He's completing 69% of his passes in the first 2 weeks, and 4 touchdowns in each of those games. He has 8 touchdowns, only 1 pick on the season. They have a top 3 passing offense over there with the Orange. They're number 3 in passing yards per game, and they're number 2 in passing attempts, and they're number 2 in passing completions. So they really throw the ball. They get up and down the field. Syracuse has also played stiffer competition. I'll probably be on the over for the first half in the game on this one. I lean that. It's 57. That's a pretty short number. I think some points will be scored. They will be in the Carrier Dome. You know, it's inside on turf. So I think the Syracuse will put up some points. I probably lean Syracuse first half and the over first half.
The Fighting Illini of Illinois, they're catching 8.5 when they travel to take on the Cornhuskers of Nebraska. Total here, a little lower. This looks like an NFL total, Five-Star, 43.5. How do we approach this?
Both of these coaches have a really, you know, defensive pedigree. You got Matt Rule with Nebraska, and you got Brett Bielema over there with Illinois. But if you look deeper into the numbers, Illinois isn't as good as they've been in the past on defense. Whereas the Cornhuskers are the top 20 in all the run defensive statistics. The quarterback, though, for Illinois, Luke Altmyer, has been pretty good. 6 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. But the only competition he really played was Kansas. And against Kansas, he didn't throw for a touchdown. Really low-scoring game. Turnovers ended up being why Kansas lost that game because of Jalen Daniels had 3 interceptions. I don't think Dylan Raiola or a.k.a. Baby Mahomes has those type of numbers. I think he's really smart with the ball. 5 touchdowns. He only threw 1 interception. That was his first game ever playing in week 1. He's been outstanding with his completion percentage. A lot like Mahomes, he has a really high completion percentage and is really smart with the ball. 74% on that. I just think that it's going to be rocking and linking. I think Nebraska is a much better team than Illinois talent-wise. I think that Matt Rule has those guys ready to play. We're going to go with Baby Mahomes and Matt Rule. We're going to lay the 8.5 with Nebraska at home. That's going to be official play for me.
All right, let's head out to the West Coast. San Jose State, plus 12. Well, Washington State lit down after the big win against their rival in a game with a total of 55.5.
I'm definitely looking for a letdown spot right here. Biggest win, as you said, in years for Jake Dickert in their program. And if you watch the game like I did, you saw how emotional Jake Dickert was. Like, he was almost on the field with like a minute left. You know, the clock's running. He was already like on the field and talking, and he's shouting at Washington players. And I'm like, wow, this guy really wanted this one, because, you know, Wazoo was looked at as the little dogs in that state. Everybody, you know, loved the Huskies last year, and they went to the national championship game. They've always been the bigger market. They've always been the most marketed team in that state. So it's like a little brother complex, and they finally get over the hump and beat them. And, you know, it couldn't have been more sweeter for him as well, because it's kind of like Washington State got left out, you know, and Washington left them to die. Kind of like Oklahoma State and Oklahoma. The hate for Oklahoma State is more now, because, like, how dare you leave us in our rivalry and go join this other conference when our daddies and our granddaddies and uncles played against each other. That's the same thing going on in the Northwest with Washington, man. Washington State is really upset that Washington went to the Big Ten. They feel like that those schools have always played each other, always been the same conference. Luckily for us, they were able to continue the rivalry as the Apple Cup continued this year, just played a lot earlier since it's not a conference game anymore. On the other side of the field, San Jose State. Brett Brennan left San Jose State and went to Arizona, but he left a lot in the cupboard, and he left a really sound foundation. And that's playing defense and just playing good football, smart football, no penalties, defense, big shots, controlling the tempo, intelligent football. They continue to have Ken Niumatola, who used to be the coach at Navy. He's switched up his whole offense now. No more running the option. They're running a pro-style offense. They got Emmett Brown as the quarterback. He transferred from, guess where, Wazoo. So he's going back to Washington State. 5'10", little short guy, but he can throw it. He had 9 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, 60% passing completion percentage. Nick Nash is an NFL player. He's played quarterback for this team, and he's also been a receiver. He's been focused on receiver the last 2 years. He already has 6 touchdowns. He went off for 17 receptions, 225 yards, 3 touchdowns in week 1. Had 7 receptions for 90 yards and a touchdown against Air Force. And then last week against your Sacramento State Hornets, he had 10 receptions, 170 yards, 2 touchdowns. And as you know, Sacramento State isn't a walking, you know, like a walking mat or something like that. Like they're not a bad team, you know, even though people don't know about those Hornets or not, those kids can play over there. So he had a big game against them as well. I think that San Jose State surprises Washington State in this game and makes this game very competitive. San Jose State is in a lot of games. They're 9-1 in their last 10 straight up, and they're 8-2 against the spread in their last 10. Another thing, Washington State is giving up over 300 yards passing a game. They're 127th ranked in passing yards defense. They're 132nd ranked in completions allowed. I think that San Jose State surprises them, man. San Jose State is holding opponents to 48% completion percentage on defense, so they really are good against, you know, the pass. Washington State's going to have to use John Mateer to scramble. If they can slow down that run enough, I think San Jose State could even pull it outright. They'll definitely be in this game, I think, in the fourth quarter. So this is an official play for me. It's actually going to be one of my bigger plays. I'm going with San Jose State plus 12. I think Washington State will be a little bit too hyped on a short week coming off upsetting their rival.
All right, let's move back into the National Football League as Thursday Night Football continues. These short weeks are terrible. Terrible spot for the Jets, right? They open Monday night in San Francisco. Then they have to play Tennessee on a short week. They get the win there, but I almost wonder if they had a real quarterback if they would have really got the win, right? Now they get their home opener. It should be rocking there. Because there's high hopes for the Jets this year, but they play a team that has had their number for the past 20 years, and that's the New England Patriots, who seem to consistently beat the Jets no matter what is going on. I'll tell you what, five-star, I've already jumped in on this game. I took the points with the Patriots, and my idea here is that the total's 39, and I'm getting 6.5. I don't know if it's still 6.5, but that's what I got it at. So just take the team names out. If you to tell me it's a primetime game, the total's 39, I'm going to just take plus 6.5. I'm not even going to look at the team names. To me, it's a numbers play and just a theory play that when the books, who are pretty good at setting these totals, say it's going to be a low-scoring game, these points become more and more valuable. Now let's actually slide over to the football field and look at some reasons why we like, or at least I like, the Patriots here. Number one, we know the Jets offense is predicated on running the ball. I'd argue they have the best running back room in the league. Braylon Allen is up there, right, with David Montgomery and Tyler Allgeier as the best backup in the league. They don't lose any juice when Breece Hall needs a rest. So they do need to run the ball. They do like to run the ball. But one thing the Patriots have shown this year is that they're still strong against the run. Not surprised with Gerard Mayo instilling that Belichick-style offense or defense there. But guess what? It's from a different voice. It's from a younger voice, and it's probably not so prickly, right? So you're getting all the great principles that Belichick did, but with a younger, fresher, more excited voice. Secondly, what's one of the weaknesses of the New York Jets? In my mind, they only have one wide receiver for Aaron Rodgers to throw through. Then they're all below average. And maybe Mike Williams would get in there and get some work. But right now he's on a limited snap count. And Alan Lazard, guys, this isn't 2017. I know that he might be able to get some things done here or there, but I'm not too worried about him. And the Patriots now, this was a tough loss for them last year. But with Christian Gonzalez back, they do have someone to put on Garrett Wilson. I'm not saying that Garrett Wilson isn't going to get his because he's a great player, virtually unstoppable. But they'll definitely slow him down here. I think both teams are going to run the ball. That keeps this clock running. And so this game should go under, and then that plus 6.5 is good. Those are the ways that I'm looking at this game. What are your thoughts? Are you on the Jets or the Patriots?
I'll definitely be with you on the Patriots, as you said. And besides last year, the Jets have lost to the Patriots 9 straight times. They finally won last winter against them, and they're 1-9 in their last 10 matchups. Against Mayo was the coach every time. He was on the coach staff with Belichick, even though he wasn't the head guy, he was the defensive coordinator, you know, and his top assistant. So I think that he already has the formula for them. The Jets just aren't really a good team. You know, they're more hyped than anything. Robert Saleh, he doesn't impress me as a head coach. You know, I don't like Nate Hackett. I don't think that he knows what he's doing at all. I don't think he has the type of presence that affects a quarterback room and an offensive room where the players want to really give their best to him. And I don't think he's really that brilliant of a coach. He's using a lot of old traditional offense that was played many years ago, and now the game has evolved. So I'm not too high on the Jets this year. I am surprised by the Patriots, as usual, even though Belichick left, as you said, just a younger voice, younger version of Belichick, just the cerebral, just as smart, just as tough. So this year, this is the stat that's the difference for me in this game. The Jets are known for supposedly having defense, but their defense hasn't really played good this year. They're ranked 24th in rushing yards allowed per game. They're ranked 20th in rushing yards per attempt, and those are the sweet spots for New England. New England is top 5 in rushing yards and rushing attempts in the league. They're 13th ranked in yards per rush. They average 4.7, almost 5 yards a carry. And it just happened that that's exactly what the Jets give up per carry. So I think that the Patriots are going to be able to win this game in the trenches. And I think that Jacoby Brissett is, you know, one of the more underrated quarterbacks. He's very competent. He's seen a lot of football. He's played a lot of places and played with a lot of really good quarterbacks and learned a lot. He's an elder statesman, and I think he's perfect, actually, for what Gerard Mayo wants to do. I think that the Patriots are actually trying to win some football games. People thought that they were going to tank out. I think they feel like they have their quarterback in Drake May. They're just going to bring them along slowly. But until the end, why not win as many games as we can? And I think that they can actually pull out an outright victory here. I actually like the Patriots' money line, but I for sure be playing the Patriots plus 6.
You mentioned Drake May. I want to give the Patriots credit. So many of these guys throw these rookie quarterbacks in right away. Maybe if they're – I was listening today. Normally, the backup quarterbacks gets 5% of first-team snaps. They have Drake May taking 30% of the snaps. So the team understands this guy's the future, but I love it. You got to earn the job. And he's probably not better than Jacoby Brissett right now, who's, what, his 8th, 9th year in the league? Right. So I think they're doing it right. When I was a kid, they always developed these quarterbacks. They didn't throw them in right away. Russell Wilson, with his rookie success, kind of upset the apple cart. and got everyone thinking you got to play these guys on their rookie contract. Hopefully we go back to a little more player development here, and hopefully the Patriots are able to be successful, because we do know this is a copycat league. It's time for the Ball and Parlay, but you already know where I'm at. 5-star. I already gave my reasons. I'm on the Patriots plus 6.5. And, you know, I like the under as well. I think they're completely correlated. What's your play for the people?
My play will be, since you're going to go with that, I'm rolling with Nebraska. I think Matt Rhule has some good things going on out there in Lincoln. I always liked him as a coach, and I think he finally has the quarterback that he needs to get some things done. Just not enough playmaking on Illinois' side. I know they'll be well coached and ready for the game, but I think that Nebraska is able to win this game by double digits. I think that Lincoln is a really tough place to play, especially on a Friday night. The whole world will be watching. I think it'll be on Fox Sports. So give me Nebraska minus 8.5, but I also will be playing with spread the plus 6 with the Patriots. I really like that one a lot. I'm also going to play the Patriots money line. Anything for the people spread before we get out of here?
Man, fun show today. You know, we got to talk about all our stuff. We've both been so busy this week. You know, we didn't get a chance to have a phone call like usual. So the people got to hear us catch up, because, you know, I value your input, especially on some of these young quarterbacks, right? So you gave me some good insight here on Will Levis, Malik Willis, Anthony Richardson. I mean, these are the type of insights you're going to need to be able to win going forward. So I'm happy to hear your thoughts there, and I'm going to take that information to continue beating the NFL.
Always a great show to spread, and likewise, I really like your insight. You have a different way of handicapping to me, and I like it because it gives me another perspective of the NFL. Guys, as always, we appreciate you for tuning in. Hit that like button. No Cino Royale today. I'm sure he'll be back very soon. You guys, it's always us versus the machine. Remember, we do this for the underground and the underdog. So I've been doing pretty well this year because all the dogs have been barking. They've been howling. Hey, man, let's continue to stay hot. Let's continue to win. As always, I dedicate this show to the greatest Houston sports fan that I know, and that's my father, John H. Lenz. I do this for you, Dad, for Spread a Stare. I'm 5-star in Vegas. This is The Wagering World. We'll see you on Friday.